Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Video Store Memoirs. I'm your humble host, Kevin Salina. And with me, as always, is my BFF, my ride or die, my fill-in-the-blank, because it means person I hang with a lot, Jana Schumacher. Please say hello.
Hello.
All right, so, gonna let you guys know, this episode is going to go backwards, a long ways backwards, because apparently I have violated some law in this world that I have never seen this movie up until this point. Both my partner here, my wife, her husband, looked at me with disgust, I think is the best way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So today, we are going to right this wrong, apparently. We are going to be reviewing 1987's Adventures in Babysitting, starring the beautiful Elizabeth Shue. I'm going to let my partner take over because she knows what she's talking about. Take it away, Jana.
For anyone who was a child in the 80s and early 90s, to have not seen this movie is a shame. There are four of us in this house that are all from the same generation, all grew up in the same decade, and all of us had seen this movie multiple times.
Or so you thought.
Except for Kevin. This is a travesty. We had to write. We pulled a movie out of our schedule to put this one in because I could not believe he had not seen it.
And apparently in this discussion, when this came out, also a couple other movies have been brought to light that apparently were going to be thrown into our schedule because I haven't seen them. And again, I have violated unwritten laws. Kind of like in baseball, you know?
You should lose the right to call yourself a Gen Xer. That's what it is.
Ouch!
Yeah, like this is one of the classic Gen X childhood movies.
Anyway, can we actually talk about the damn movie now?
Let's look at what our friends at IMDb say about it. It says a babysitter must battle her way through the big city after being stranded there with the kids she's looking after. Yeah, it's a lot more than that. And they're not stranded there, per se. They're in a crappy situation.
You know something I just noticed here? Director of this movie is Chris Columbus.
Yeah.
And this man must have had one traumatic childhood because some of the situations we have seen over the years with his movies baffle me. I was like, where did you come up with some of this shit?
Yeah. Yeah. His troubles lead to great entertainment for us.
I mean, I'm not going to knock him on it.
Let's take a look at the amazing cast from this 1987 movie. First of all, as Kevin already mentioned, the main character, the babysitter, Chris, played by Elizabeth Shue.
Love
this
her.
Woman never ages.
No. I mean, up until now, she's in The Boys, and you can tell. I don't know how old she is, but she still looks so awesome.
She's amazing. And then we have Keith Coogan as Brad, Maya Bruton as Sarah, the little girl who is braver and more balls than any of the other people in this movie for half of it.
Why is it always the youngest kid is the most unafraid in situations and the most psychotic?
Because they haven't lived enough to be scared yet. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
We also have Anthony Rapp as the friend Daryl, one of the best small bit parts, Vincent D'Onofrio as Dawson, the owner of the garage.
Otherwise known as Thor. So he was in Marvel before he played Kingpin.
Yeah, credited as Vincent Philip D'Onofrio for the movie.
Philip.
We also have Penelope Ann Miller as Chris's best friend, Brenda. And then Bradley Whitford as the douchey boyfriend.
Mike.
So for a late 80s, early 90s, pretty strong cast.
Yeah, yeah.
The plot of this movie is just so nonsensical. It's hilarious. Like, it starts out, it's a It's actually a pretty plausible plot in the beginning. It's a friend wanting to help and save her friend, but it's like everything that could go wrong does go wrong along the way.
Yeah.
I mean, it starts, first of all, that she's supposed to have this... The opening of the movie is Chris, Elizabeth Shue's character, getting ready for a date and being all excited about it. She looks beautiful. She's supposed to be going on a date with her boyfriend to celebrate their anniversary. And then when he gets there, he's, like, not dressed up or anything and tells her that his sister's sick and he can't go and he'll make it up to her maybe next Friday or Saturday. Who knows? And just complete ass.
Girls like you are... one in a million.
Yeah.
Whatever, you douche-wang mother.
So then she gets talked into babysitting for the night instead.
I just love the fact that her argument to not babysit was, I just want to be alone and depressed tonight.
Yeah, but her mom's like, no, and her best friend tells her to go because her best friend, Brenda, comes by to see her, who is having a contentious relationship with her stepmother, and one of my favorite lines threatens to put Drano in her tab.
For those of you, Tab is a soda that was known in the 80s.
A diet soda that was very popular.
And it's caffeine-free back in the day.
Yeah.
That was the big thing.
Anyway, so she decides to go and babysit, and dumb Brenda decides to run away and get stuck at the bus station in downtown Chicago with no money because she took a cab from the suburbs of Oak Park to the bus station.
And then had the nerve to be like, my dad doesn't know where I am. That's the idea behind running away.
So she calls Chris at the house she's babysitting at from a payphone collect. Because remember, this is 1987. There are no cell phones.
Correct.
So she found a phone booth and she knew where Chris was, the house Chris was working at that night. So called the house collect.
Yeah.
And Chris just accepted the charges because apparently they're rich and that's cool.
I mean, they owned the building.
Yeah.
downtown Chicago.
So she's like, but I'm babysitting. I can't go. And she's like, please come and get me. This homeless guy's yelling at her from outside because it's his house that she's
You're in my house!
So Chris decides she's going to go get her. The kids con her into taking them with them.
Yeah, I don't know. That wasn't a con. That was a straight up... you want to get in trouble or...
Daryl blackmailed her, basically.
Yeah, he basically like, well, you know, I, you don't want me to stay, so I'm just going to go home, make sure my parents talk to their parents that, you know, you were heading out and stuff like that. But don't worry, you have a good time. Enjoy the city.
Yeah, so, they're doing fine. They're on the expressway. They're on their way, and they get a flat tire. That's the first problem they run into. They have a flat tire. She goes to check the back... and there's no spare.
Yeah, there's no spare, no jack, no nothing. And lo and behold, Mr. Pruitt happens along, who's a tow truck driver. One-handed tow truck driver, which everybody was like, oh my God, he has a hook for a hand!
Right, well, it doesn't help that as they were driving, Chris was telling them a scary story about a guy with a hook who scrapes off people's faces.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Yeah, that didn't work.
Yeah, but he comes to their rescue. He he's got a tow truck driver, tells him he's going to take them to Dawson's garage where they can get the tire, and when she tells him they have no money, he's like, look, I'll buy you the tire. You know, he feels bad. He doesn't want to leave them on the side of the
road.
Yeah,
he doesn't want to leave them. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, except when they're driving and they're almost there, he gets a call from someone, from Dawson, that says that they saw a car outside his house, and the guy, like, goes off. So apparently his wife's cheating. He drives the tow truck to his house, and a fight ensues between him and the guy. He's got a gun. He's shooting.
All I could think about when he got this call, there's a bit done by Dave Chappelle in his early days where he's like, he's a limo, the guy who's his limo driver is driving along. He's like, oh, that's cool. Hey, I'll make sure I get you to where you need to go and stuff. And all of a sudden gets a call. He's like, yeah, what? Slow down. What the fuck? No. Oh, hell no. I'm on the way. Hang up. I gotta make a stop. And he's like, this guy totally forgets he's got one 17-year-old, two 15-year-olds, and an 8-year-old in the car. All he was about, Excuse me, let me open my glove box so I can grab my gun with my hook.
Yeah, and so while he's out there fighting and shooting and bullets are going off, hitting his truck, hitting their car, they run out of the truck screaming and are trying to hide, and they see the guy's car, who is the guy that's cheating, and hops in there with him, hops into the car thinking they're going to escape and lock the doors. But lo and behold, that car's in the process of being stolen.
By a nice guy named Joe.
Joe. I love Joe. Even as a kid, when I watched this movie, I had an affinity for Joe. Joe Gipp, played by Calvin Levels.
Yeah.
He was really good in this movie. He was like, yeah, he was like a car thief with a heart.
Yeah, you know, nice guy, but he still will steal your ride, you know?
Right. And he says, when they ask him why he does it, he says it pays him a lot of money.
Yeah, it's like, I'm able to live.
So he rescues them by keeping them with him and takes them to the chop shop where he's dropping the car off.
I just love the fact that he basically said, hey, he's like, well, you could just drop us off the corner and just take the car. We're not going to say anything. He's like, no, I wouldn't get out of my car in this neighborhood, right, man. This is a thief.
Right. He's a car thief. And he says, I wouldn't get out of the car in this neighborhood. I'm not dropping you off like that.
Yeah.
So they pull into the chop shop. And of course, all of the big bad owners and people in charge there aren't happy to see the kids, and they say, okay, we'll take them upstairs, lock them in the office, we'll do something with them when we're done with our meeting, finishing planning out where all their cars are going.
Right.
So he's downstairs standing guard, the kids are upstairs. So this whole time, there's this ongoing plot point. You have to know that the March edition of Playboy has just come out, and apparently the centerfold looks just like Elizabeth Shue's character, Chris.
Yeah.
In all reality, I believe she did pose for the photos. It's her. But it's like this whole thing. Like, I think her name was Shailene.
Shailene, yeah, that was the name.
But everybody, like, Daryl had brought the magazine with him to show Brad and say it looks just like her. And, like, at some point in the car, Brad throws it out the window. And he's like, oh, that was my dad's. He's like, well, why'd you bring it?
Yeah.
Anyway, they are upstairs in the office, and Daryl spies the same magazine on the desk and sees it and takes it because...
Hey, I'll be able to put back my dad's magazine.
He's like, it's a replacement, and plus he liked looking at the naked pictures, apparently, of the chick that looks like Chris. So he takes the magazine, and then they come up with a scheme to escape. They see an opening above in the warehouse that they're in the room they're in, and they climb out, and they do this huge, daring escape. And the whole time, Joe is at the bottom of the stairs. He sees this happening, and he's like, okay, they're brave. I'm going to let this happen.
Yeah, he's like, you know something? If they look like they're about to fall, then I'll say something, but, you know.
He wanted them to escape. You do you, boo-boo. He didn't want them to be there. He was trying to let them go. It's the other guys, the guys in charge that did that.
Yeah, who looked like some crappy, the lead bad guy looked like some crappy Bond villain, you know? Yeah,
they're wannabe mobsters, but I mean, they run a chop shop, whatever, so.
Yeah.
They're getting their escape done, they're getting out, they get across a beam, it's super scary, they all make it across, they get out the window. The guy downstairs, they're talking about their orders, and then all of a sudden he's like, hey, where's the Playboy? And they're like, oh, I think it's up in the office. And he's like, it's got my notes. Apparently the centerfold, he'd wrote out
all the notes about what
the orders for one of the cars.
Not just a car. It was like what the orders were for Philadelphia.
Yeah. So the one of the other guys in charge is like, oh, I left it up in the office. I'll go get it. Runs up into the office, first busting in, just looking for the magazine and can't find it. Doesn't even realize at first the kids aren't there.
Yeah. I mean, that should have been thing one right there. It's like, where the... Where are these little fuckers?
But he finally realizes after he panics looking for the magazine, he looks and looks up and sees the opening in the roof and sees they're gone. Goes back downstairs, tells the guy the magazine's not there, and he's like, why not? And he's like, I think the kids took it. We'll get it from the kids. They're not here. So, whole chase scene ensues. Which leads to one of my favorite scenes in this movie.
This is so... such an oddball moment, in my opinion. Like, they bust into a club, a blues club. I swear to God, it was probably House of Blues. It's gotta be. Like, back in the day. But still, they bust in this, right onto stage, in the middle of the beginning of another song. Like, and the lead singer, I'm pretty sure was Chuck Berry. It's like, ain't nobody get off this stage without singing the blues.
I'm... confirming it right now.
And they're just, he was adamant. He's like, all right, no, I said nobody leaves until you sing. It's like, okay, sure. And so they have to riff their own version of Down Home Blues to get off the stage. So she starts singing about babysitting these bratty ass fucking kids. Granted, it's funny. It's because they get more into it, especially when the kids start singing back up on it. But it's just one of those over-the-top moments that you're like, okay, there's no way in hell.
But she does amazing. That Babysitting Blues is, like, an amazing song.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it's, you know, it's meant to be, like, off the top of her head, but...
That is Albert Collins.
That was Albert Collins? Okay.
Yes.
But, yeah, and so they keep running, and they're running all over the place. Okay, just so I'm keeping a tally here. So far, we have five things that have happened to this group of people in the search for their friend, her friend Brenda, that one thing in a single movie would have been enough, but so far we've got five, and there's many more to come, so keep track with me.
So, they escape the blues club. And they are outside, walking around outside. And the whole time, the poor little girl's got to go to the bathroom. They get on the train. From the blues club, they get on the train. They get on the L.
Yes.
Okay.
Which, by the way, thank God they've upgraded the frickin' L from what it used to be, apparently, in the 80s. Because that looked like some rickety... Shiny Time Station looking shit. I mean...
Hey, I have vivid memories of riding that version of the L when I was little.
Oh my God, that is horrifying!
Yeah. Anyways, the train they get on, which we think as we were looking, it looked like the Green Line?
Well, it was green. I don't know it was the blue line, because you saw where they got off, it said University Hospital, and it was in blue, so...
Okay, so it was the blue line, fine. They get on, and, like, a gang rumble ensues in the car that they're in.
Straight out of the Beat It video from Michael Jackson. You got one guy, one group of guys all in black jackets. The other ones all in red jackets. And they're like, yo, man, when we get to this street, it's on. Right. You in my turf. I was like, please.
It's like a turf war on the train, because one's saying, this is our car. And he's like, yeah, well, this car is going to go through our turf. And then they're like, I clearly you guys are about to kill each other. Could you let us get off the train first?
You're like, you know, do what you're going to do, but yeah, just let us go first. And he's like, you know what? Shut up, bitch.
Oh.
No. No, baby. No.
Poor Brad. He tried to stand up. He didn't appreciate the gang member calling her bitch. And ended up with a switchblade in his toe.
Oh, my God. But you... did get a great line in that.
Yeah, because like she snatches up that blade, because he says something, he throws it and says, don't fuck with whatever the name of their, the Lords of something, whatever the name of their gang is. And she picks up that switchblade, holds it out to him and says, don't fuck with the babysitter.
And all of a sudden, these badass mothers like, okay, wait a minute. This bitch is ready to stab us. We had never dealt with women trying to stab us. We've only dealt with men. I think we need to back off.
Needless to say, they're able to get off the train.
Yeah. Well, four of them were able to get off. The fifth was carried off.
Yes, because poor Brad now has an owie in his foot.
Has a hole in his
foot. But they just so happened to get off at the University Hospital stop. And they're all like, what are we going to do? We have to call your parents. And the smartest one being the youngest one goes, duh, we take them to the hospital, and points out the sign that says they're at the hospital.
Yeah. So they carry him all the way down there. While he's getting taken care of, you run into characters who they've already met. The guy who was sleeping with the tow truck driver, Pruitt's wife, he's down there and he's like all bloodied up. And
cops on him and he's like, hey, those are the kids that stole my car. You want them, not me.
You know, and then miraculously, you know, after Brad is taken care of.
His one stitch. Which he's disheartened by. He's like, how am I supposed to look cool and say I survived a gang fight with one stitch?
Yeah. So they run into Mr. Pruitt, who's now a fugitive, But he lets them know, hey, by the way, your car did get dropped off, and they did fix it, but it's going to cost you $50. They wouldn't let me just let you have it.
Well, no, he said, I paid for the window because that was on me, but they're going to make you
pay the
$50 for the tire. And she's like, well, shit, we don't have $50. Whatever, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So now they're walking in the university area, and now this is where poor Sarah has to pee. And they stumble upon a frat party.
Yeah, just random party, you know. I can't even tell you what the call signs
are. Dumb Daryl was like, ooh, a party, and runs off to get lost in the party. And so she's like, fine, whatever, Sarah, you can go to the bathroom while we're here.
Yeah.
Poor little girl finally gets to go to the bathroom. Daryl's off trying to impress frat dudes and making out with a college chick.
And nearly gets his butt kicked in the process because her boyfriend is literally right across the room. Like, girl, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, big dumb jock dude.
Yeah.
But she meets a nice guy there who, like, thought she was going there, who thought she was a student there. But she tells him, she's like, no, I'm a senior in high school. And he's like, that's impossible. And they talk and they're nice. And, like, she's telling about their day. And he's telling her how brave he thinks she is. And he's done such a great job. Like, you could tell, like, he's really into her. He offers to drive them to the tow truck place, to the Dawson's garage. He helps them find the money. They needed 50. He can only find 45, but he gives them the money, drops them off. It's all very nice. They get there safely.
And, you know, the intelligent moment happened for a brief second where he's like, hey, I'm going to make sure you're all squared away before I take off. And she's like, no, we're good. You can go ahead. We don't want to keep you. And, well, I'm like,
in her mind, she's about to get her car. So it's like, it's fine. I'm going to pay this guy what we have. He'll give us our car and we'll go. Like, you don't need to stay around. But he was like trying to be nice and smart and gentlemanly. Let me hang out. I'll hang out here with the kids. You go and take care of the car. I'll make sure you get off.
Yeah.
But no.
No.
She's like, no, it's fine. She's I've got this.
Thanks, we're good. Stupid!
They don't got this.
Because here comes Mr. Dawson, who they meet.
And this whole time, so FYI, Sarah, the little girl, has an obsession with Thor. The Thor, ladies and gentlemen.
Marvel's Thor.
And I will tell you, this movie was my first ever exposure to Thor. At seven, I hadn't heard of him yet at that point, and this little girl was obsessed with Thor, and she knew all about him. In the beginning at home, she's drawing pictures of him. She wears the little
helmet
like he wears. She has a little cape. She carries around
a hammer.
Like, she's all about Thor. So they get to the garage, and no one's there, and then suddenly coming down on a chain elevator thing from, like, higher above with all this steam and stuff. It's very thematic entrance. Guy comes down, long blonde hair, wearing a baseball cap, tall, holding a hammer, and little girl's like, shit, and she thinks it's Thor.
Yeah.
Like, she swears it's Thor.
Like, nobody could have told her otherwise. Like, no, that is an angry man, sweetheart. No, that is Thor. Right. Forget all y'all.
Who, by the way, is a very young Vincent D'Onofrio.
Vincent Philip D'Onofrio.
Yes. But he's like, nah, you owe me 50, this is only 45. And she's like, that's all we have. And he's like, you don't got a car. Right. You don't got the money, you don't got a car. And then, like, the girl, like, flips out on him. It's like, you're supposed to be a hero and help people. And then she's like, oh, I know what's wrong. You don't have your helmet. You're not yourself. And so she goes to give him her helmet. And then, like, something in his heart clicks and softens. Like, something, little kid giving a prized possession.
Something in his heart grew 3 sizes that day.
Yeah, and he's like, you give this to me? And she's like, yeah, you need it. And so then he decides to be nice and lets them take the car for the $45, but then gives her the helmet back. He's like, hey, I've got one of these at home. You keep yours. Like,
yeah.
It was very sweet.
Very cool.
So they get the car and they get out, and you think,
we're done. They're going home.
Let's go get Brenda. Because poor Brenda's still freaking out and having her own little issues and adventures at the bus station.
She's having about as many mishaps in that one bus station as they're having all over freaking Chicago.
Yeah. So as they're driving, they drive by a toy store that Sarah points out. It's like, oh, look at all the toys. And they're like, yeah, it's nice. They stop at a light in front of the French restaurant that Chris was supposed to go to with her boyfriend that night. And she's like, oh, that's where we were supposed to go. And Daryl is quick to point out that looks like one of you still went, because His car, Mike's car, is out front because he drives a red Camaro with a license plate that says,
so cool.
And she's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Fucker's here? So they park, and she's like, oh, we're going in. Like, this is...
And so goes inside, finds Mike, not with his little sister, obviously, but out with some local sleazy girl, I guess. And I'm using air quotes for this.
Yeah, Chris made comment about that she was noted as the easy girl in school.
Yeah, and so she goes over, confronts him, and he's like, you know, yeah, it's not my fault that you're all about me like this. I mean, but it's cool, it's fine. But
well, she walks up to the table right as he hears him telling her, this girl, the same line he told her earlier, like, girls like you only come around
once
in a lifetime, and she walks up or says, or twice in the same night. So she confronts him. It's like, great. He tries to deny, like, you're more attached to me than I am to you. And then makes a comment to Brad about sticking up for him. He's like, whatever, her knees are locked so tight.
Yeah.
And like, yeah. So he's being sleazy and cheating on her because she won't have sex with him.
Yep.
And Brad is, like, trying to stand up to him and is like, I should punch you right now. I won't stoop to your level. He's trying to be the bigger guy. And poor Daryl's like, I will, and kicks him into the table.
Kicks him right in his ass into a table so he falls on the table next to him. I was like, I love Daryl.
In the meantime, when all this is going down, little Sarah has found the dessert cart, grabs an eclair, and wanders off. They're all on their high that they just, like, kicked Mike's ass and wander out the front of the restaurant, and then she realizes Sarah is nowhere to be found.
They're like, yeah, they're all like, yeah, why is there only four of us? Right. like, why is there only three of us right now?
Where's Sarah? Well, Sarah is off standing in front of the toy store eating her stolen eclair, staring at the toys. This whole time, the bad guys have been following them and find her because they put the magazine in Sarah's backpack, and so Sarah's the one they want at this point. So they're following her, and they catch her outside the toy store. And, of course, they do everything every creepy bad guy shouldn't do. Hey, kid, come here. We just want to talk to you.
Yeah, I mean, they already know who he is. But let's not sneak up on her and grab her to get what we want. Hey, you, come here. I know we tried to kill you earlier, but don't worry. It's not going to happen all right. This time.
We just want to talk to you. Come here. And Sarah, at least smart, is like, nope. I'm out of here, and runs.
Peace out.
And was running and down an alley and sees her dad's building, which, if anybody knows Chicago downtown skyline, the building that has the slanty diamond cutout piece.
What is the name of that frickin' building?
I don't remember. I would look it up if I cared more, but it's my favorite building. I should know the name of it. But,
yeah, probably.
It's one of my favorite buildings in the downtown skyline, mostly because of this movie growing up. And then every time we drive downtown, you can see it, and it's got the big diamond slanty cutout. It's so cool. Also, side note, producer lady, a.k.a. Kevin's wife, Shannon's dad, worked on that building at some point in his life. So
yes, he did.
That's cool. But Sarah runs to that building because she thinks, I can get to mom and dad. These bad guys are after me. She's finally like, fuck it, we're finding my parents.
100%, finally. What we've said three or four times in this, the only intelligent one in this group
is the kid until a few minutes from now, because then we question her intelligence.
Well, yeah, she, I guess, you know, the group actually gets to her because, dear God, she makes a dumbass.
Yeah, so she gets in the elevator. And she doesn't know exactly which floor they're on. She touches two buttons. And instead of getting off on the first floor, it stops on. I don't know why, because she gets off on the higher floor. She pressed both buttons.
Yeah, so that part irked me a little.
Maybe she didn't touch the button enough to press it, like covered it, that it made a finger mark. Because remember, she had the eclair, she had chocolate. So her fingerprint is on two buttons.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out why she didn't get off on the first floor it stopped at, but I'm wondering if maybe she just barely touched the button and then decided to go for the higher one.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but still, that kind of irked me.
So she gets off on the higher floor, which is a building floor under construction. It's not finished. There's open windows and construction shit everywhere. And so
imagine Die Hard.
Yeah. So the two bad guys get in the elevator. They see the fingerprints. They're like, okay, you take this one, I'll take that one. they split up. And of course, the lower floor is the one her parents are actually at, the party they're at. But she's up on the other floor. The guy who follows her, she's hiding and tries to find. So her smart little kid brain decides it'll be smart to climb out the window of this skyscraper and hang by a rope.
Now, here's the part of the movie that I literally watched and I was like, what the direct fuck? Because this makes no sense. So, while this is happening, she's dangling outside the window. She loses grip and slides to the part where her feet could, like, you know, keep her from sliding off the building.
Yeah, her feet on the slanty part, that big slanty part.
The big freaking slide on the side of the building, basically. And then she starts, you know, moving away from the guy who's trying to get her and just sliding across. To the point that she actually ends up in front of the window where her parents' party is. Now, how the fuck did she get back? They show her constantly going to the right. She never backtracks. But when Chris and her brother and Daryl show up, she's back underneath that window she originally started from. How the frickin' frack did that happen? And if that could have happened, why didn't she just materialize back in the building? I'm just gonna say.
I saw it differently. She wasn't going left. She was going down. That's how, because the parents' floor was one floor down. So she was not sliding left. She was sliding down.
No, but if you watch, yeah, she slid down. Yes, that is correct. So she ends up in front of it. But when they see her, she's walking across the window as the parents are getting ready to leave. And that's how Chris sees her. Like, your sister's out on the building. So that's how they end up going up to the top floor to try and look for her, to get her. So how did she get back to where they could throw her the rope?
I don't know.
See?
I try not to think too far into that kind of stuff. I didn't notice she went over that far. Because the windows are still pretty wide and the rope was already gone. The rope got pulled up and they made it longer so they could drop it down to where she was. So, I mean, they could have swung it to the right to get her.
And also, in typical bad guy fashion, the bad guy goes out the frickin' window too.
Follow her and gets his ass stuck out there.
And then, you know, they get up there, they throw her the rope, they pull her up. And before they secure her inside the building, Brad is frantically hugging his sister. Bring the girl inside!
Brad, I understand you're happy to see her and glad you saved her, but save the reunion until you have her on the ground.
Like, forget on the floor, on the ground, literally ground level, getting back into your car.
Yeah, but they leave the guy out there. Joe shows back up, finds them up there, and tells them, like, look, I'm not going to hurt you. They just want the magazine. Give me the magazine. He shows them, look, there was notes here. And then, so they're about to leave, and the other bad guy who had went to the party floor finally shows up, and he's, like, about to tell, like, he's like, give me the magazine, and tells Joe, you leave, I'll deal with these kids. And Joe's like, nah, I'm done with this shit, and punches him out. Like, again, Joe saves the day.
Yeah.
Bad guy with a heart of gold.
You know? And so, that's when this movie turns into Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yeah. Because they get in the car, they go get Brenda.
Finally. They
finally get Brenda. And all she says to, not thank you for picking me up, what took you so long?
Have you had any idea what I've been through tonight? Bitch, please.
Woman, you want to swap notes? Because we got a few for you. Yeah. And so, they start driving. And as they're driving, they see the parents driving, like, oh my God, is that my parents' car? Oh my God, everybody duck, including Chris, who is driving. So I don't know what the...
Well, at least she doesn't fully duck. She slinks down enough so you can't see, but she can kind of still see over the window. But yeah, it's that whole, quick, everybody hide while we're in the car driving. That won't look suspicious.
No, not at all. Hey, look, ghost car.
Yeah.
And so they're racing down Lakeshore Drive, whatever.
My favorite line, though, is when they get past the car, Chris asks Brad, how fast do your parents drive? And he's like, I don't know, like 45? She's like, good, we'll go 80.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're driving, like, yeah, I think they got on 94 and they're gunning it. They get back home. They're like, all right, You two, upstairs. Everybody upstairs. Get out of your coat and pretend to watch TV and stuff like that. I'll clean up around here and I'll get things done. And as I'm watching this, I'm like, I know they're going to do this. I'm calling it right now. It's like, she's doing the cleanup thing. I'm like, I guarantee, just as she's finished and they're ready to go, everything looks back to normal, she is going to flip over the side of the couch, grab a book, and be sitting there as the door opens. Oh, hey! How's it going?
Of course, it's a classic 80s movie. Of course that was going to be in there.
I was like, come on.
This is probably one of the first movies to do it.
No, well, very well, could be. But still, I was like, oh, come on. You didn't have to be that obvious.
Yeah, so, but they get home safe. So, keep in mind the whole time, the very beginning of this, when Chris says she's going to go downtown to pick up her friend, she's like, it shouldn't take me more than an hour. 30 minutes there, 30 minutes back.
No, she said an hour there, hour back.
No, she said it would take an hour, 30 minutes there, 30 minutes back.
Oh, okay. I thought she said an hour there, hour back.
No, so she's like, it shouldn't take me more than an hour. Her parents weren't supposed to be home until, the parents weren't supposed to be home until 1 a.m. It's probably like at this point, because it was almost, when it's still daylight when they leave, and by the time they're on the expressway, it was dark. So you're probably thinking that it's probably about 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock,
something
around there.
But I'm sorry, it got so dark so fast.
Yeah, it's supposed to take an hour total trip, and they get home right at 1 a.m.
Yeah.
This night went way more than an hour.
Yeah, I mean, when you, you know, but you got to think back to all the different things. You know, I lost my car. It got shot. I had to go over here. I ended up singing in a club. I ended up running from some gangsters who constantly chased me throughout the night. I ended up going to a frat party. One of the kids got ended up making out with somebody. We got the car back. Wait a minute, got the $50, got driven to the garage. At the garage, got the car back, had to negotiate with Thor, right. Get the car, start driving, decide to stop and yell at my boyfriend for cheating on me, lose the little girl who goes over to her parents' building, who goes upstairs, ends up hanging out the fucking building, they get her, rescue her, get in the car, start driving, running to the parents on the street, and then drive past them 80 miles an hour to make sure they got back and home upstairs. And everything was cleaned up just for them to walk in and say, oh, sorry, we're late.
And she's like, oh, no problem. And so when they're driving home, Sarah realizes she left one of her skates somewhere she lost it. She's like, we have to go back. And she's like, no.
I yelled at the screen so hard.
Like, no, kid, that ain't happening. Y'all are on your way home.
Guess what? You're just going to be doing 1 foot skating from now on.
But she apparently left it in Nice Dude's car, who dropped them off at the thing. And you know, every parent and every kid of the 80s, you had the if lost, please find, and had her full name and address on it, because that's safe.
Well, back, it was a different time.
It was a different time, I know, because I know I had shit that had my name and address on it. If it was lost, please return
it. I had my name on the back of some of my t-shirts.
Yeah. So she left it in the guy's car, so he drove it all the way there and dropped off the skate, and so he could see Chris again, and they kiss, and it's sweet.
Which would have totally screwed them if he had gotten to the door to ask. Because if the parents were there when he showed up at 1 o'clock in the morning, hey, I found your kid's skate.
Right.
Then, like, everything falls apart then of what would have happened, you know?
Thank God that she was outside already when he showed up and he didn't have to talk to anybody but her.
Yeah.
It was a whirlwind of a movie. A lot of shit happens. But it's a classic 80s movie. And Elizabeth Shue is amazing in this movie.
13 different moments that happen throughout this movie. Mm-hmm. Oh, actually 14 if you want to include. Do we include the racing against the parents? Okay, so 14 different moments in this movie that basically each one of these probably could have been a single movie by itself.
Right.
But it all happened in one. It happened one night, which is another 80s movie. That's pretty good.
But again, that's why it's adventures in babysitting and not adventure in babysitting.
Ha 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 ha.
There were many adventures that happened along the way.
All right, we'll give it. All right. What do you give it? How do you rate?
Oh, I love this movie. It's nice nostalgia looking back and seeing. And, you know, it's another one of those. I grew up in the Chicagoland area, seeing an 80s movie that was based in the Chicagoland area. It's always fun getting the, I know that place, or I've been there.
I mean, I yelled at when I saw one of the houses. I was like, I know that house!
Yeah, I give this a solid 4 clamshells.
I thought it was fun. I did enjoy Elizabeth Shue in this one. I'm going to give it 2.5, maybe 3, because it's just so cheesy.
It's supposed to be cheesy.
I'm sorry. I'm ready to grab a grater and just, like, I'm sorry. Like, for all you people out there who love this movie, I mean, it's, for me, it's just okay.
Remember, he didn't grow up watching it over and over again like he should have.
Sorry if I watched other movies when I was younger. Mainly movies I probably shouldn't have been watching in the first place.
Yeah, although that was a nice comment about, we did talk about that as well, about the fact that this came out in 87. Most of us were 7, 8 when this came out. When we finally saw it, when it came on TV, it was probably more like 88, 89. So we were 8 and 9 watching this. Looking back now, like,
y'all
very,
messed up.
Very heavily featured Playboy centerfold, lots of swearing, lots of innuendo about different sexual acts and things. I wouldn't let my kid watch this. And he's 12 now. So probably another one of those movies we probably shouldn't have been watching as kids, but yeah, we did. I mean, I still have the whole song for the Babysitting Blues memorized. I was singing along with it.
So, in other words, it's okay that I hadn't seen it because, you know, as you just said...
Nah, you still should have saw it. No getting out of that.
I thought I'd give it a shot.
The next classic that he missed that Shannon and I are going to force
him my God
to watch, because again, we can't believe he claims he never seen it, is Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Oh my God. I did not become a movie whore until 97. I'm just going to put that out there. That's when I got my first Entertainment Weekly and I really started paying attention to movies. So a lot of supposed movies that I should have seen, like,
we have a lot of making up to do for his childhood.
No, we don't. No, we don't.
Yeah, we do.
We're good.
Anyways.
Tell them where to find us, lady. We're moving on from this subject.
Have you seen Adventures in Babysitting? What did you think of it? Was it one of the classics you watched growing up? Or are you the same as Kevin and like, I never saw it, whatever, I don't get it? Let us know. We want to hear from you. We are all over social media. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter, we are on Instagram, we are on TikTok, we are on YouTube. On Facebook and Instagram, we are at Video Store Memoirs. On Twitter, we are at Video Store Mem. And on YouTube and TikTok, we are just Video Store Memoirs. Look us up, give us a like, follow, tweet, retweet, whatever you have to do on that social media to like make shit happen. We want to hear from you.
Oh, as always, thank you all for tuning in. For those of you who make comments on Facebook, on Twitter, on TikTok, we appreciate it. We're taking notes. We're answering whatever we get a chance. So keep them coming. We will be responding. But now I can say I have seen another 80s classic, apparently.
Yes. And we'll be rectifying the rest shortly. Don't you worry.
Yeah, thank God. Great. Looking forward to it.
So excited.
So happy. Until next time, I've been Kevin.
I'm Jana.
Thank you all again. We'll see you next time and enjoy the movie.
Bye.